Hey, know what time it is? It's movie retrospective time. That's what time it is.
Yeah, this is a good one.
Yeah, going back to 1983, actually one of my favorite movies from the 1980s. I had this on VHS, and I wore the shit out of it. In fact, yeah. I don't even need notes for this shit, because I've seen this movie so many times, yeah. I've essentially memorized. I did watch it again for this, well, because Shudder added it the other day. This is 1983's Christine.
Yeah, I read the book, saw the movie several times.
Yeah, same here.
I didn't like it that much when it first came out, but then it aged really well. I liked it.
It really did.
On multiple viewings out there. It was pretty cool.
It's funny because this is one of those movies, and it was directed by John Carpenter,
yeah.
for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
And it's one of those ones that, like, for some reason, like in the 80s, I kept forgetting that it was a John Carpenter movie.
It doesn't really feel like one. It's a little more expensive.
Yeah, I guess it sort of feels like one, yeah. but it's like, it was something that I kept forgetting. And I feel like not only is this an underrated John Carpenter movie, it's also an underrated Stephen King adaptation.
Yeah, one of the better ones.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't know, like, I don't have, like, you know, I can't, like, say, like, top five or anything like that, but it's like, this is definitely one of the best Stephen King adaptations, I think. And I was watching some other reviews of it, and I'm kind of glad that a lot of movie reviewers, even like, you know, dudes much younger than us, do seem to have a lot of appreciation for this movie. And that makes me happy because I feel like it didn't really do very well at the time and it kind of got forgotten about. But this is definitely, because there were a lot of shitty Stephen King adaptations.
Yeah.
A lot of good ones too, but most of them were kind of shitty. But this one was actually really good.
If you guys don't know what this story is about, it's about a kid in high school who's... His parents won't let him get a car, but he does it anyway. He buys a car with not much money and buys an old jalopy. Turns out that the jalopy's haunted.
And or possessed,
it,
I guess.
Well, it possesses
him. Or demonic
or whatever. It does a lot of weird stuff. In the book, it does more than what it does in the movie. But the movie pretty much captures it. I mean, it leaves some stuff out, but... It's pretty cool.
I think this is actually a pretty faithful adaptation. I mean, they kind of changed Christine's origin story a little bit. But I think, you know, some stuff that works in a book, and I think I've probably mentioned this on a lot of the shows about Stephen King adaptations, stuff that works in a book doesn't always work in a movie. So I think the choices they made were probably the right ones. This pretty much follows the beat of the book. And actually, when I saw, I read the book first. Now, the book and the movie came out in the same year, and I'll explain why that happened in a minute, but I didn't see this in the theater. I didn't see it till it was on cable later on, and then I recorded it, so I probably read the book first. And honestly, when I saw the movie, it seemed spot on. Like, it seemed what I imagined when I was reading the book, like, as far as all the characters went and the setting and everything like that. So I think he did a really good job. Now, the interesting thing about it is that John Carpenter was not super jazzed about doing this one in particular. He was kind of bummed out because, you know, he had just done The Thing in 1981, which was, like, a big deal, and he was really into it. It was, like, a passion project.
Yeah, and it kind of flopped.
And it flopped, like, even critically, which is amazing, because it was, like, one of the best horror movies ever made, clearly.
Aged super well. Classic.
Yeah, it's obviously
classic.
Yeah. Obviously way ahead of its time.
Way ahead of its time.
Because it did
scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
I think it scared the shit out of
my dad.
A lot of
took
people.
Me to see it. Scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
I was like, afterwards, we're driving back home. You know what I mean? I was visiting for the summer down in Mississippi, and I was awful quiet. He goes, "You have quiet over there." And I was like, "Yeah, that was weird." Because that was a scary
movie, Dad.
I was thinking about, man, maybe there are aliens that can come and just absorb you. That was a good one.
Yeah, because that seems almost like kind of teetering on the edge of plausibility. It's like that could totally happen.
Yeah, like The Blob. It's basically a modified version of The Blob.
So John Carpenter was kind of like bummed out that the movie hadn't done as well as he wanted because he had been so excited about it. So he was actually working on an adaptation of Firestarter, of all things. But then that kind of fell through. Obviously, it got made later on with a different director.
It's another good movie.
It is, actually. That's a pretty decent adaptation. I think I need
both of these, actually.
I like Christine better, but Firestarter is good, too.
I got to get Christine and Firestarter on Steelbook, Steelbook Blu-ray. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I think that would be good.
And that's a Carpenter flick, that one.
Yeah.
I don't think Firestarter is it?
No.
Yeah.
Like I said, he was initially attached to that project, but then it fell through, and then it kind of got made later.
That's still a good one. It kind of feels like a Carpenter flick anyway.
It does, kind of. Yeah. They probably like picked up some of his ideas from it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he wasn't like super jazzed about doing Christine. He said it was just a job. You know, he was still kind of in the dumps about the thing not doing as well as he wanted. But in the end, he decided to go and do this. Now, the interesting thing about this is that the book of Christine was not out when this movie went into production.
I know that.
What ended up happening was Stephen King was like still working on some shit. And obviously, they had made so many successful adaptations of his work, like, isn't it, they had done Carrie and all this other stuff. So, you know, people were coming to him going, well, have you got anything that's coming out soon that we can, you know, option so that we can make a movie out of it, like, before the book comes out? So he goes, okay, well, I have Christine and I have Cujo. So he offers it, and the people were like, meh, they didn't really want to do Cujo, but they said, oh, Christine sounds kind of good. Now, I think it was maybe the producer, like, when they said, well, what's the movie about? He's like, well, it's like a demonic car. And he's like, for real? Yeah, he's like, yeah. So they kind of thought it was a dumb idea. But then, like, they read his book, and then they read, like, the screenplay of it. I think that the guy that wrote the screenplay was the same guy that did the screen adaptation for Salem's Lot.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's the same
guy.
Please
DVD.
Correct me if
that's
I'm wrong.
That's pretty good.
So that's the same guy, and so they got him to do the screen treatment for Christine. As I said, the movie actually came out earlier in the year, and then I think the book came out like late in the year, like only a couple months later. So the movie actually came out a little bit before the book did. Now, the interesting and one of my favorite things about this, other than John Carpenter's direction and John Carpenter's score in this, which I love like the music and the sound effects and stuff, is I think that the cast is my favorite part. Keith Gordon as Arnie Cunningham is fantastic. Yeah. Now, what's interesting about this is that he was not the first pick. Do you know who was the first pick? Scott Baio.
Yeah, I don't think that would have worked.
No.
Yeah, for you guys that don't know, Arnie, who's the guy who's the kid who buys the car, he's a real nerd.
Mm-hmm.
He's a nice guy. He's
but likable.
Super loser. Yeah,
yeah, he's in the chess club.
Yeah,
he's super
real skinny,
dorky and wiry.
Acne and stuff. Now, his best friend is a jock, you know, who kind of protects him.
Dennis.
Big football player.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got it all. Got the hot girlfriend, he's got the hot car and everything. But he keeps this Arnie from getting beat up.
Yeah.
Well, he buys this demonic car. He buys it from the guy, what's the guy's name? Arnell, maybe?
No, that's the garage guy.
That's the garage guy. What was the name of the guy who sold
LeBay was his last name.
LeBay?
It was George, I think it was George LeBay because they... Yeah. they
kind of like book, Anton LaVey.
Well, in the book, there was two brothers, and like the guy that died in the car was not the guy. You know what I mean? In the movie, they made it was like, oh, my brother. This was my brother's car, and he died in it. Blah blah blah.
In the book, the guy who owned the car sold it
to him.
Yeah,
like and then he died later.
In the, I thought the book was better. The guy was from what I remember, he was eating up with cancer, wasn't he? He was dying, eating up with cancer at something.
You
like
know,
that.
Maybe
I think what it was. I thought it might have been like lung cancer or something because. It's been a long time since I read the book. And he's this old, eaten up, fucking burnt out, basically an evil greaser.
Yeah.
You know, for you guys too young to know what a greaser is, that was a 1950s goth, basically. Kind of like fucking, you know.
Big old duck ass hair.
Yeah, and they were, you know, motorcycles and cars. And they were kind of the rough kids, I guess you could say. You know, like Fonz. Okay.
So except not as cool.
Not as cool.
Not as nice
as a good
fun.
Guy, actually.
Not as nice as fun.
Yeah, Fonz
was
a good
guy. Just, like, delinquents.
If you see Grease, it was like, you know, one of the guys from the
T-Birds.
The T-Birds, yeah. Anyway, which we had to do Grease, too. That was a good one.
And, I also kind of love
Grease,
too, even though it's bad.
Man, sometimes the musicals fucking get me. But anyway, all right. So, this old greaser sells him this burnout old 50s. It's a Fury, I think. Wasn't it?
Plymouth
Fury?
The 1958.
Yeah, from the 50s. And he loves this car, but he's selling it to Arnie. Yeah, you can have a kid, all that kind of stuff. And then as soon as he sells it, the dude dies. Well, this car is awful strange. And it starts doing weird things like odometer running backwards. He's working on it, but the car gets better as he drives it. He doesn't really remember fixing certain things. It just
gets and they kind of go into that a little bit in the book where it's like, he's like, did I fix that?
Yeah,
it's
he
like,
can remember.
In the movie, they kind of referred to it because, you know, like Darnell comes into the garage, like where he's fixing the car up, and he's like, you know, he put in new windshield wipers over a busted windshield. It's like he's just going at things all cockeyed.
And he wasn't sure how he was going to replace this windshield because
it was rounded
on the edges. It was cracked, and you couldn't get that anymore. But he just noticed that I think the cracks were getting smaller.
Yeah.
And eventually he didn't have to replace it. But he was, and it was weird, he'd drive it and he'd play old 50s music and he'd feel like he was getting in love with this car.
Yeah.
And this car was like loving on him and shit as he's driving it. And he starts getting obsessed with this car. And Arnie slowly starts losing all his acne.
Yeah.
And he starts getting a little more buffed out. And he starts to slowly become a greaser.
Yeah.
And he starts to actually not... He starts to eventually go from being kind of a nerd into being cool, and then he kind of morphs into being a fucking dick.
Yeah. Okay. Should have stopped right there in the middle, but then he
like
goes a little too far.
Real arrogant fucking dick, you know what I mean? And he's got all these enemies in his past from when he was a nerd picking on him, and then weird shit happens to these enemies. They get killed, and I can't spoil everything. If you haven't seen the movie, you should probably go see the movie.
Well, but, we should just
spoil it. You know, it's an old movie. Car goes out and kills people. It's implied that I think maybe he was in the car certain times when people got
killed. Well, yeah, I should say that, like,
this is the book. Sometimes the book and the movie start to blur with me.
Well, like I said, the book and the movie are pretty similar, as in, like, all the plot points and stuff. The book is gorier than the movie. The movie actually isn't really all that gory, surprisingly. The ending is different. In the book... Which, actually, I think the movie ending might be a little bit better in this. In the book, Arnie doesn't get killed. He's not in Christine when Christine gets smushed by Dennis and Lee.
Right.
He's actually gets killed somewhere else in another car wreck later on. I think his mom gets killed, too. But that doesn't happen in the movie. In the movie, he's in the car.
And another what really kind of let me down in the movie is that in the book, over time, as Arnie becomes more and more, I guess you could say, possessed and more evil, he starts seeing... LeBay.
Yeah.
And LeBay starts riding with him in the passenger seat. And he's kind of an undead version of LeBay. Kind of, sometimes he's slightly kind of rotten looking.
Yeah, he's all zombie looking.
And in the book, he gives him some awesome fucking advice on how to fuck people over and how to be a badass.
The
and
shitters.
How these shitters are all evil and
that's
you got to get even
everybody.
With them. And yeah, it's like, it's kind of like something from the Dark Side of the Force or a Star Wars movie with the Sith and shit.
He's just like the Emperor.
Yeah, he's kind of like the Emperor, and he's, you know, telling him to go out and do shit, you know, and fuck these people up. But he's doing it in a 1950s greaser way, which is really weird.
Yeah.
And they're drinking out of the same fucking bottles and shit.
That's right. I remember that from the
book. Was it Rebel Yell they were drinking?
Oh, shit. It might have been.
I think it might have been Rebel.
I haven't read the book in a while.
Yeah, they were just like... Rebel Yell's like fucking real fucking white trash redneck fucking. Although I heard it's kind of, since Billy Idol made it famous, I think it's a little better than it used
to be.
They're
like, hey, we can probably put our price up now.
Yeah. I don't know. It's probably not anymore. It might have been temporary.
I don't even think I've seen it. Not that I've been like looking for it.
You could order it. It used to be that you could find it in the South.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you know, that was shit you found in Alabama.
Now next time we're in the liquor store, I'm going to have to like think about like looking for it.
You find it in Alabama, Mississippi, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rebel Yell. Rebel Yell was like worse than Wild Turkey.
It was wow. That's saying something.
Even though it wasn't from the South, I think it was actually distilled on a contract up north.
Probably.
But they sold it to us.
It's a carpet bag.
Yeah, it's a carpet, yeah. It sounded like something Elvis would drink.
Yeah.
So
with his nanner sandwiches.
Yeah, with his nanner sandwiches. Peanut butter nanner. Fried in butter.
Too bad I don't like
butter. Fried a whole fucking sandwich in butter.
But you could take a peanut butter sandwich and fry it in butter, and I would eat it very happily.
I've done it before.
Well, yeah.
I don't think it made it peanut butter, but yeah, any French shit. Come on, we gotta get back to the get sidetracked about
I was gonna say that the most significant I know we always do that.
Yeah.
The most significant difference between the book and the movie, and like I said, I think it was probably a good decision that they changed it for the movie, and there's a reason why they did, and I'll get into that in a second. But in the book, like you said, the car, as far as I know, as far as I can remember, the car was like normal until LeBay died.
Yeah.
And then he like possessed the car. I mean, I don't know. Like,
I think LeBay said some stuff, some hints that the car wasn't normal. Because I think it killed some guys on the
assembly
line. Well,
it did kill his wife and his kid.
Yeah, it was an evil force, and LeBay was kind of joined with it.
Yeah.
And if you owned it, and it was evidently female, if you owned it, it tried to own you.
Yeah.
And there was like this tainted love type experience going on between you and this car. It would try to kill your girlfriend or, you know, and your...
It did try to kill Arnie's girlfriend by choking her to death.
It didn't want any other women in your life. It was... And you got they got addicted to it. It was like heroin slowly taking over your life or something. You know, it was an excellent book. I think the book added a different dimension to it. But, you know, that's with every movie. Even even shiny.
Yeah, yeah. Like I
if
said,
if you like the movie, you should read the book.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, that you know, tonally it's pretty similar, yeah. And stuff like that. But like I said, in a way, I kind of think that I mean, in the movie, they imply that the car was just evil from the beginning. They don't really. They just basically said this is a demonic car because they show it rolling off the assembly line in Detroit, and you know immediately somebody's checking under the tire and like the yeah. hood slams on his hand.
It killed a guy,
and then it kills
working.
A guy.
Yeah.
Now the interesting thing about this too is that the Plymouth Fury they had 24 Plymouths.
Damn.
For this movie. Now they couldn't all
that might
be,
have been all of the Plymouth
well,
Furies.
Yeah.
That
well, no, because what happened was because they didn't make that many Furies. He had to use other type. He had to use like a Plymouth Belvedere and a couple of other type because they looked very similar.
Yeah.
Now the Plymouth Fury was never
not famous really.
Well, that's why Stephen King wanted it to be a Plymouth yeah. Fury. He said, "I wanted a car that was kind of like forgotten about that yeah. didn't have any other." Kind of thing
connection
attached
to anything
it.
Else, right.
So, you know, so he could kind of make his own iconic thing. Now, the Plymouth Fury was never, and as far as I know, the Belvedere never came out in that color, that red. It was they were all beige.
Yeah, it was something that you, even when I was in high school, you know, you'd never want to be caught dead in something like that. You know what I mean? When I go to down south, Mississippi, I'd sometimes borrow my dead grandmother's car to drive around.
Yeah.
And there was a Plymouth Satellite. And fucking they'd look at me crazy driving that old 68 Satellite. I think it was like a 68 or 65.
Yeah.
It was a weird metallic blue, baby blue, metallic ragtop, kind of a smaller kind of a car really for its era. But the Fury, the Plymouth Fury was a fucking land yacht. For those of you
they're enormous.
Yeah, for those of you in Europe there's just no experience.
Yeah, it's like a boat. It's like yeah. you're steering a gigantic boat, like and the Titanic, through the streets
yeah,
of the United States.
Even big for the American road, really.
It was. Yeah. It was very wide.
And they always oversteered. You just steer, and the fucking whole chassis continues to kind of turn sideways, even though you're going straight. And you end the turn, because they had real springy suspensions, and they just...
That's some crazy shit.
They weren't. They were never built to drive fast. You had to drive the thing slow, like an old man.
Yeah.
But it felt like, you know how you have that sensation where you get out of your house and then you get in the car and you leave your house? Mm-hmm. You never really have that sensation. You still feel like you're in your house.
It's an extension of your house.
It's an extension of the house.
You just went another room that moves
around. You're yelling to the passenger, hand me that. Yeah, that's it. You could literally have sex.
Give me a cigarette.
You could have sex in the back seat. We used to do that kind of shit in those big old cars.
Without your foot hitting
no.
the gear
plenty
shifter.
Of room. Plenty of room. I've seen foreigners get in those old cars, you know, back in the 90s. And, you know, fucking like in Boston, a friend of mine had one of those big old things trying to, and it was a big old fucking Cadillac, trying to drive that thing around Boston.
That's what I learned to drive
impossible.
It. It was my grandfather's.
Yeah, the fins on it and shit,
it was
you know?
Huge.
I can,
like, turn it or park it. I'm just like, holy crap, this is just like. This
they
is
burned
ridiculous.
A lot of gasoline. They had a lot yeah. of torque. They weren't fast, but they were strong.
Yeah.
Not much brakes. You had to plan ahead. You had to plan ahead. You had to see. Oh,
I'm going to have to stop.
I'm going to have to stop up there. You might as well.
In about 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
Got to, like, ease it down.
Yeah.
The interesting thing, and another thing that was interesting about this movie, was that it was made in 1983, but it was set in 1978 for whatever reason. And when Arnie goes to buy the car, and it's all fucked up and junky and everything like that. I think he buys it for, in the book, it was $250. I think that was a comparable amount. And Dennis tries to talk him out of it because he's like, oh, it's a hunk of junk. You'd get a better car for that and all this other kind of shit. But I feel like nowadays, if you found a car like that and if you knew how to restore it and stuff, I don't think anybody would get all up in your grill about paying $250 for a car like that if you could restore it. Because holy crap, everybody'd be like, holy shit, look at that thing.
The thing is this story is taking place in a time where that was just an old car.
That's what I'm saying. So it's that's one thing that's like, you know, maybe people nowadays can't relate to. But like back then, they're like, oh, that was just some old person's piece of shit car.
Yeah, there was lots of those were all being crunched.
Yeah.
And people were happy that they were being crunched. Because they were from another era. And really, they just shouldn't have really been on the road. I mean, they were huge. They couldn't stop. They didn't have much safety, you know, features to them. They no crumple zones. If you wrecked that car, chances are you got killed and you killed a bunch of other people with him.
You know, yeah, cars were really not safe.
The dashboards, the steering wheels, the steering columns, none of that stuff would break. You would hit it and it would just go through you. It was super solid.
My grandmother's brother died that way, yeah. In fact.
Yeah.
And when he was 17.
And you just weigh so much, you know, somebody could rear end you at relatively low speeds and it could kill them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, just crushed their car.
Well, yeah.
I had that girl rear-end my Mustang back, like, in, what was that, 2013, 2014? Yeah. And it totaled her car.
Yeah.
All it did was just scratch the paint off my bumper. And she was in one of those little bitty, I forgot what that thing was. It was a little bitty Japanese car, a little subcompact. I forgot what it was. I felt something go boom, and hit like that, and it turned back, and I saw a car just crunched like an accordion.
Yeah.
And she didn't have any insurance or anything.
Well, they're made to crunch nowadays.
Just crunch it, just like an
accordion. I mean, because even my car, I had a Nissan, and it was, like, not even that new. It was a 2004. And I hit somebody, and the whole front end was smushed. It was totaled, but I was totally fine. Like, everything was totally fine.
I had this 94. Yeah, it was a 94 Mustang. I bought it for cheap with a blown motor. Rebuilt the motor, fucking redid everything. Dual fucking short exhaust with thrush mufflers on it and everything, good wheels. I was going to put that damn supercharger out of Thunderbird in it. But one thing led to another. Because it was the V6, it wasn't the V8. But it was heavy by today's standards. It just became impractical.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A smaller, lighter car just makes so much more sense.
I drove it a few times and it was like so heavy and so low to the ground that even when I was going, like, I felt like I had to, like, push the gas, like, all the way down, like, to go, like, at a normal speed.
You did. The controls were all cables.
Because I was used to driving, like, a Honda Fit, and I was going, like, 100 miles an hour, and I felt like I was in an airplane, you know?
Yeah, the Honda Fit was actually faster than this Mustang.
It was.
But the Mustang looked and sounded powerful.
I mean, well, the thing...
When you drove it, it was like riding in a bomber.
Yeah.
Because of my exhaust.
I mean, new cars, I could, like, if I'm not paying attention to the speed thing, I'm just like, I'm going 110 miles an hour without even fucking realizing it.
Yeah, 110 miles an hour in a 94 Mustang feels like 200.
That's what I mean. It's like, so I felt like it was kind of like, it was really hard to drive. Because I had to drive it for a while after mine got totaled.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say was that one of the reasons that they changed the whole thing of the book where, you know, in the book it was LeBay's ghost, essentially, that was like, you know, hanging out with him and talking to him and getting him to do things and kind of possessing him and changing his personality and stuff. One of the reasons they didn't want to do that was because of An American Werewolf in London, because that had just come out and that had that whole like subplot about his dead friend coming back and getting like, you know, more and more like decayed as the movie went on and like telling him things and giving him advice and stuff. So they didn't want to look like they were ripping that off. So they decided that they were going to make the car just, like, evil from the beginning and not really explain it. It was just, like, a possessed car that was, you know, just came off the line that way. It was, like, born bad or whatever. So, yeah, so that was why they did that. And another thing, too, that, I don't know, I feel like what I was saying before about the casting being, like, the best part of this, and I think we went off on a tangent, but I was saying, they wanted Scott Baio for Arnie. They wanted Brooke Shields for Lee, the girlfriend. And they wanted... Actually, Kevin Bacon was going to be Dennis. And he was actually hired. But then he got the lead in Footloose, so he said he couldn't do it. So then they got... John Stockwell, I think his name is.
He's better for that role anyway.
Yeah, and so, like I said, it almost seemed like even though pretty much nobody was, like, the main choice, because John Carpenter was basically, like, Scott Baio and Brooke Shields, he's like, no. He's like, I want actors that aren't really that well-known so people can relate to them better.
When I see that guy, just think of that role.
Yeah. I mean, he was in other movies. I think he was in Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield and stuff.
Yeah, there's something about that.
He actually went into directing later on, as did John Stockwell. They both went, and John Stockwell was actually in My Science Project, which, if you haven't seen that, that's another fucking movie that I love from the 80s. We should do one for that if I can find it.
Right.
It's kind of one that a lot of people don't talk about. Dennis fucking Hopper is in it. It's so good. It's
what was
so
good about him is that he could pull off being a nerd, but then he could also pull off
being a comic. That was the best thing about
it. He could pull off being a psychopath, Greaser come
back
to life.
It was totally believable. Like, yeah. And he was likable either way, almost. It's like, yeah. When he was a nerd at the beginning, yeah, he was nerdy, and you could understand why he got beat up, yeah. But he was also, like, a really likable character. Also, the friendship between him and Dennis was really good, really believable. I mean, they'd grown up together, clearly. I don't know if they mentioned that outright.
Yeah,
but
in
that's...
the book, they grew up for the young age, and yeah. They kind of took two different paths.
Right, but they were still, like, looked out for each yeah. other all the time. It was, like, a really nice friendship.
He was actually a little bit more nerdy in the book.
Yeah.
In the book, he was like almost borderline Asperger's or something.
Yeah.
You know, and he had a lot of acne and he was like super, super skinny. But from what I remember is, once that car got a hold of him, he bulked up, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. And his skin cleared up and he yeah. started, yeah.
Yeah, and he didn't work out, but he just got stronger and bigger. He started throwing his dad around.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah. He did that in the movie, too.
Yeah, okay,
well, he actually, like, punched his dad or smacked his dad or yeah. something at some point. Right. But, well, yeah, in the book, they were implying that he was taking on all of LeBay's characteristics. Because there was one point in the book where yeah. he was out working on the car doing something, and he pulled his back, so yeah. he ended up wearing a back brace just like LeBay
That's
wore.
Right.
So he was taking over his... And
LeBay
talking
was
like
trying
him.
To merge with him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So that was, like, that was not... what they did in the movie. And like right. I said, I don't actually mind that change.
It was good enough.
Yeah, it's
it
like,
worked.
I know why they did it.
Yeah.
And honestly, the end of the movie, I actually kind of like better. Because throughout the whole entire movie, you're not really sure if... Well, you are kind of sure, but he wanted to make it ambiguous whether Arnie was in the car when it killed people... or whether he wasn't in the car. So what they did was that they blacked out all the windows when they were doing the kill scenes so that you wouldn't be able to see the stunt driver, but also the stunt driver couldn't see out to drive. Mm-hmm. So when you saw, you know, the iconic scene where he kills some of the bullies that had fucked up the car, and it's like in that gas station, and the gas station blows up, and then Christine comes out and she's on fire. There was a guy in there, like a stunt guy in there driving that, and he couldn't see where he was going.
Right.
Because
but
it was
when I remember
out.
In the book, he wasn't in that car sometimes, or at least I don't think he was in that car.
Well, I think in the movie they kind of implied that most of the time he wasn't in the car because yeah. a few times he was somewhere else.
Oh, but in the book it also comes back and he says, "Well, what was I zoned out and did I?"
Yeah,
do
like
it?
He
That's
didn't
right.
know if he
That's
was
right.
in the car.
Right.
He didn't yeah. remember.
He was probably in the car.
In this one, I feel like they made him more of an innocent bystander because yeah. until the end. I think yeah. when, like, Buddy Repperton got run over, when Moochie got run over, I don't think he was in the car because wasn't he... He yeah. was doing shit for Will Darnell, so he was out of town.
Well, in the movie, they make it... I remember them making it clear that he wasn't in the car.
Yeah, I'm pretty okay. sure he wasn't
but
in the
I,
car.
I think in the book, it was more ambiguous.
Yeah.
That he may have been in the car.
But he
like
couldn't remember.
But he yeah. couldn't remember. But remember, this was a long time ago. I haven't read that book in a long time.
Yeah.
But it was an excellent book. It was definitely as good as The Shining book.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I liked it. You know what I mean? And it's yeah. like, I have to give a shout out, too, to the guy. I think he's passed away now, and I can't remember the actor's name. But the guy that played Will Darnell, the yeah. fucking, the guy that runs the fucking mm-hmm. garage. Where
awesome.
Arnie, like, yeah. I love that guy.
That wasn't a character. That was a reality for me.
Well, that's
because
well,
growing up, I was dealing with those guys.
Well, that's
They're
what
all
made
dead
it
now.
Funny. That's what
yeah.
made it funny.
It was a man's duty to be a fucking asshole to teenagers.
He's just there chewing on his fucking
yeah,
cigar,
that's
and
right.
he's just saying like. And yeah. at one point, like you think that he's kind of softening up a little bit toward Arnie.
No,
and he says something like he's like. Well, hey, you know, if you want to... He's like, you know, when I told you could, like, you know, fix your car with the stuff
Doesn't
in the junk...
You, can do this and
you,
that.
You can't, yeah. like, you know, use
yeah.
all of my stuff
yeah.
and
oh, yeah.
and everything. But then he was saying something like...
Yep.
You know, he kind of started to warm to Arnie in the end.
But then it tightened back up.
But then he says something yeah. like... He says something like, you know, oh, well, you know, if you could do some stuff around here, like, put the toilet paper on a little spool, shit like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, maybe I'll even throw in a few bucks. And you think,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
he's softening. And Arnie's like, well, I got to think about it. Well, don't think about it too
yeah,
hard.
Yeah,
I'll
yeah,
throw
yeah,
it
yeah,
out of your
yeah.
fucking ass.
yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm going to be like that probably when I get old.
oh,
because
I'm,
that,
sure.
I'm probably going to be exact same
you
way.
You are kind of like that already.
I remember, yeah, it's true.
I do.
I was influenced by that generation.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, I get that. Like
yeah.
like I said, he reminds me
Some
of like old dudes in my family and
yeah.
stuff. So yeah. that's, I think that's why I find that character so funny. That he's just like, he's just so grouchy.
It was about being hard, but being fair. and keeping young bucks in line. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You just can't let these young guys do whatever the fuck they want to do, or they'll end up just being fucked up.
Yeah.
You have to manage that shit. Okay? Even Nietzsche says that. You have to manage that shit. Because that prepares
That's
them
the words he used, too.
Yeah. Nietzsche says manage that shit. Okay? Says you got to put That's rules on these young guys. That way that makes them stronger. It makes them better, and then you can take the rules away. And then they can learn. They can be strong enough to break rules or make their own rules. You can't just raise a young dude without any rules. He'll be weak.
But yeah, so yeah. Like I was saying about...
Y'all men know what I'm talking about. Okay.
But like I was saying, like, he just has some of the best lines, and he's so funny. It's like, I just love the way... Like, he comes in, and he's looking at Christine, who's all fucked up because Arnie hasn't really fixed her up yet.
Yeah.
And he's just looking there. He's like, you know, you can't polish a turd.
Can't polish a turd.
Except you can. I saw that Mythbusters. But you know what I mean?
Yeah. But old dude knows the deal. Get rid of that piece of shit.
Just so, so funny. But, like, there's some really fucking great lines in this. And, you know, he's great in it. Fucking, like I said, Keith Gordon is great in, as Arnie in it. Like, even when he gets kind of, like, cool later on, like, he has some great fucking lines. And it's just... This is just one of the movies, like I said, this is one of my 80s comfort movies.
Yeah, and I was going to say that. There's a lot of stuff about this movie that kind of
makes you feel comforting.
Makes you feel good.
Like I said, I've taped it off cable, and I watched it a million zillion times.
It's the story of it's the structure of the story itself, and the way it's acted.
Yeah.
There's nothing really in here to kind of shatter, you know, what's a good way to put it? There's nothing in here to take you out of the movie.
Well, it's a very simple, it's very straightforward. Yeah. I mean, you kind of know where it's going to go, but that's okay.
That's fine. Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's a revenge story. And like I said, I think the thing that really elevates it, you know, other than John Carpenter's direction and his score and everything, is the cast. And I think the cast is like really, really good. And they all work really well together.
Make me want to see it again.
Yeah, well, it's on Shudder at the moment. Right. Like I said, my favorite part about it is like Arnie and Dennis's like friendship and like how, because it's totally believable.
Yeah. Go watch a movie. If you like the movie, I think you'll like it. It's on Shudder.
Yeah.
Shudder needs to start sponsoring us too. I'm getting pissed. Every time we start talking about this movie, we mention Shudder.
Well, yeah.
They got some bimbo out
there.
They got some other bimbo on there running Shudder. Shudder's her sponsor. Why don't we? Yeah, she's got 20,000 subscribers. But
well,
still,
there's your answer.
They
right
need to
there.
Pay us. Where's my Shudder money?
Here's your Shudder money.
Anyway, you can go watch that on Shudder. You can watch it if you can find it. You know, you could probably watch it. They're probably renting that off of YouTube, too.
I would
YouTube's
imagine. Yeah, it is, because I saw it earlier. I think it's $2.99, $3.99, something like that.
Yeah, watch it. If you like it, read the book.
Yeah,
I think the book is actually better. I'm going to say that.
Well, the book is almost always better.
The book is always better.
The movie.
But
I think this is a really faithful adaptation, and I actually think it's easily top 10, maybe even top 5, like Stephen King adaptations. I mean, it's just really, really good. And, you know, like I said, everything, when I was reading the book and seeing the movie, like a lot of it, I mean, the reason that maybe we can't remember like what happened in the movie or what happened in the book was just because it was so similar, because, I mean, John Carpenter did a really good job, other than a couple of changes. And, you know, I understand why they made them.
Yeah, and if you liked The Shining, don't think you know the book, unless you read the book. The book is very different.
Well, yeah.
It is that same story, just that there's a whole lot more to that.
Yeah. This is not like that. This is a pretty straightforward
adaptation. Pretty close.
Yeah. But yeah, I like it, and like I said, I feel like it's an underrated Stephen King adaptation and an underrated John Carpenter movie. So if you haven't seen it, definitely go check it out, because I
it's one of Carpenter's better movies.
Yeah, and I think it's like one of the... Oh, another thing I was going to say too, just like right before we end, was that, remember how I said like it wasn't very gory, which was like really surprising?
Yeah.
They were so concerned that it wasn't gory enough. I mean, the studio wanted an R rating, which is weird, because nowadays they want everything to be PG-13. But back then they said it would be better. It's a horror movie. They want R rating so they could get like all the teenagers want to go see it.
Yeah.
So they were worried that it wouldn't be gory enough to get an R rating. So then they went back and just put like a whole bunch of swearing.
Yeah, to get it R-rated.
It's like, so everything's motherfucker this and Cunningham that. And it's like, so everything is swear. That's why there's so much swearing.
That was in
it.
The book, though.
It was, yeah. But that's why they put that in the movie specifically, because they wanted to get an R rating.
It wouldn't surprise me if we see a relaunch of Christine. with all the Stephen King shit.
You know what? I was watching a review the other day. Well, I heard
you could do this bitch right nowadays.
I heard they were remaking Firestarter. I don't know about Christine though. But the interesting thing about it though is like even like when Christine is like regenerating herself, that still looks fantastic.
Yeah, they did a great job.
No CGI. They did it with hydraulics and running.
And then they played it backwards.
Yeah, and then they ran the film in reverse. Like, they shot it upside down with, like, some plastic hydraulics and stuff. Nowadays, and it looks really good.
Nowadays, though, you could really extend those action scenes of the combat with the car.
Well, you can make it a lot gorier. Long.
You can make it, yeah, you could do it. You could do that really
because
well.
A lot of it wasn't that gory.
And I definitely would put LeBay back in the fucking story.
Yeah, so make it, like, the two brothers instead of just one guy.
Yeah.
Because it was two brothers is what it was.
And I put LeBay back in there.
Yeah.
And then the undead LeBay trying to take over. And the possession fucking things. And visions. Because remember, he was having visions as well.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me, actually. And I think in the book, didn't Dennis got into the car, like, before Arnie even bought it? And I thought he had a vision, which was one of the reasons why he told Arnie, don't buy it, because he got, like, a really bad feeling.
Yeah, when you read it, there's all the little details. The car is a lot creepier.
Well, I think the first and the third act of the book are from Dennis's point of view. Like, the middle is, like, you know, from third person, but I think the first, so that's all from his point of view. So he's, like, talking a lot about his friendship with Arnie and how Arnie is changing, like, from his point of view.
Yeah.
But, like, all the killings and stuff in the middle, that's all from the third person.
That'll probably do it. Wrap it up.
Yeah. As I said, this is on Shudder right now if you want to go check it out, or you can rent it on YouTube. I believe it's $3.99. So go check it out if you haven't seen it already. It's from 1983. That will do it for our latest movie retrospective. And let's see, if you like the show, like, share, subscribe on all your social media. If you'd like to financially support the show, go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/13oclockpodcast, or go to our blog, 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com, and there's a button in the sidebar where you can go to a PayPal account if you'd like to give a one-time donation. Remember, these movie retrospectives come out every Friday or Thursday if you're a patron. We also have 13 o'clock matinee, comes out every Sunday, and our regular episodes, which are usually true crime or paranormal, they come out every Tuesday. We will see you next time. Bye.